are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, June 19th, 2019. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Acting Secretary of Defense, no longer acting. Was it his assaults on his wife? Or his lack of desire to assault Iran? ISIS concentration camps get called out as Trump vows to deport more. And Joe Biden waxes nostalgic over our segregationist era. University of Alaska Fairbanks researchers find the Canadian Arctic permafrost is melting 70 years earlier than expected. House fails to curb the notorious FISA 702 surveillance law. Meanwhile, the House does vote to block military transgender ban. And polls show confusion on exactly what is Medicare for All. Perhaps not unrelated Democratic leadership, utterly clueless. And that's the best case scenario. South Dakota tees up a law aimed at criminalizing environmental protests. And shareholders continue to reap huge, huge benefits from the tax cuts that were supposedly going to help all of us. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of stuff to get to today. Thank you so much for joining us. Sorry, we got a slightly late start. Not too bad. I've seen worse. But thank you for joining us. As always, you can support this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your support. It's our members who make this show possible day in, day out. Yesterday marked the start of Donald Trump's 2020 campaign. He's raised a bunch of money. We received emails from people who were getting fundraising emails as if they were Republicans. So who knows what that's about? I wonder if they're not looking to build a list to see which Democrats they think they can get. But they're in full swing. And Donald Trump had his first campaign rally, I guess. I mean, it seems like he's had multiple campaign rallies. But this is the first official campaign rally. It was held in Orlando, Florida. Seems to have been fairly well attended. And, of course, he played all the greatest hits during the show. The Lock Her Up, the Acid Washed Server. They did introduce a new slogan, which is Keep America Great, which I think might be problematic, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about this. This part, however, was the most fascinating thing I found, and it's interesting because it at least acknowledges, or is this gives you a sense that they are aware that they cannot run things exactly as they did last time. We're in that mode now. We're in office. So we got to be a little bit more low-key on, or a little bit less explicit, let's put it this way, on, you know, our problems with black and brown people. A little bit less explicit when it comes to being our thuggery. Just keep it in check. It's campaign season. What better way to get that message across than the candidate himself going out and asking his followers to be respectful of other people. That, of course, is the best way to do it. This way is a different way. It is from what sounds like possibly an automated voice.
We all have the rights to free speech. This is a private event paid for and hosted by Donald J. Trump for President Inc. And you came to hear the president. To accommodate the right to free speech and peaceful assembly while ensuring an orderly rally, we have provided a secure area outside the venue for all protesters, and we ask anyone wishing to demonstrate to please exit to that secure area. Despite this accommodation, some individuals may still seek to disrupt our patriotic event, and President Trump needs your help in maintaining a peaceful atmosphere at all times.
Gotta be peaceful.
Gotta be peaceful. Can we get way more? What happened? Oh, we missed all the good stuff. Yeah. Forgive us, ladies and gentlemen.
We all have the right to anyone wishing to demonstrate to... Despite this accommodation, some individuals may still seek to disrupt our patriotic event, and President Trump needs your help in maintaining a peaceful atmosphere at all times. If a protest starts near you, please do not in any way touch or harm a protester. Please notify law enforcement officers of the location of the protester by holding a rally sign over your head and chanting, Trump, Trump, Trump. Encourage others around you to do the same until officers can remove the protester from the rally.
Pause it, because everybody in the studio is just like looking like, wait, what? What did they just say? So just to be clear, if you're at one of these events and you see a protester, alert the officers by holding up a rally sign and chanting, Trump, 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 go.
Atmosphere at all times. If a protest starts near you, please do not in any way touch or harm a protester. Please notify law enforcement officers of the location of the protester by holding a rally sign over your head and chanting, Trump, Trump, Trump. Encourage others around you to do the same until officers...
How much would you pay those perfect liars, guys, to go back into these rallies and constantly hold the sign over their
accusing other people of being
Trump? Yeah, just start yelling, yeah, exactly. Trump, Trump, Trump.
We got a protester here. We got a protester.
No, they don't have to do that. Yeah. That's the beauty of it. All they have to do is just go Trump, 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 and then the cops show up.
And then kind of point at other people, but then be like, no, I'm just saying Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's going to happen
that
anyways.
That is a bad, that's like, a that very, is a, yeah, that's not a happen. Smart way yeah. to indicate there's a problem.
That's going to happen constantly without
that's,
them.
That's like literally saying, if you find yourself in the water and you're drowning, yell, I'm having a great time, over and over again.
Lovely summer
Wave
swim.
Wave your arms up like this and go, I'm having a great time.
Shout all good.
Oh,
we'll
God.
See how long that lasts, though.
Well, yeah, exactly.
When those poll numbers, if they start to dip, Trump's going to be like, we got to stop with that announcement.
The announcement's
we
not
need
right.
To be tough.
Have her say, take the signs and hit them with yeah. the signs and yell Trump, Trump, Trump.
And Mr. Trump will pay for your legal bills. Checks in the mail.
Hey, folks. Time for you to stop overpaying for poor performing razors and join the 10 million people who have tried Harry's. Our listeners can even claim a special offer by going to harrys.com/majority report. You know what I like about Harry's. We've been they've been with us for what, like 3 years now. Even back in the days where their blade was not as trim as it is now. You know, the slimmer blade, which was my favorite upgrade by Harry's because of the asymmetry with my nostrils. We've talked about that quite a bit on this program, probably too much. But the ergonomic holder, I just like the idea that I'm using a razor that feels a little bit classic and stylish as opposed to one that looks like it was sold as some type of, I don't know, body armor accessory plan. But it has a smooth glide and, of course, You all know I enjoy the fact that it is significantly less expensive than those Rambo-style shavers you get at the drugstore. And how do they do it? They cut out the middleman. Harry's is able to offer quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 a blade. And thanks to their 100% quality guarantee, if you don't love your shave, they'll give you a full refund. Get a trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, weighted ergonomic handle for an easy grip, 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade for a close shave, rich lathering shave gel that will leave you smelling great, and a travel blade cover to keep you your razor dry and on the go. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/majority report. Make sure you go to harrys.com/majority report to redeem your offer and to let them know that I sent you, and we appreciate them supporting the show. Also, with more than 70 sizes, including their signature half-cup sizes, Third Love designs bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and a premium feel. All you got to do is you answer a few simple questions via Third Love's Fit Finder quiz to find your perfect fit in 60 seconds. Then, thanks to Third Love's 100% fit guarantee, you can wear, wash, and put your bra to the test for 60 days. And if you don't love it, you return it. Third Love washes it, and then they donate it to a woman in need. My understanding is this is hands down the most comfortable bra you'll own. Straps that won't slip, tagless labels, lightweight, super thin memory foam cups. I do not wear bras, but we assigned one of our trusted sort of prosumers associated with the program, and this was her response. I like they don't have a zillion options. It's easy to choose something quickly. The fit is great. I usually have to return most bras I order online, even though they're in my size. I ordered two and both fit. That almost never happens. Super comfortable for an everyday bra, but not as boring as most t-shirt bras. Subtle, cute details so I don't feel basic. There you have it, folks. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/majority now to find your perfect fitting bra. Get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/majority for 15% off today. All right, let's get into a couple of things in the news. First off, of course, we no longer have a acting Secretary of Defense. I don't know that in the history of this country, or at least in modern era, I imagine at one point, have there been less confirmed cabinet members? Have there been an absence of a Secretary of Defense? And yesterday, I suggested, and when we started off the show, we were talking about the belligerence that we're seeing coming out of, particularly the State Department, towards Iran. The Defense Department weren't hearing a real lot. And, you know, I compare and contrast this to the Bush era, where Secretary of Defense was out there, Donald Rumsfeld. He was pushing. Whereas the Secretary of State, sort of tapping on the brakes lightly, apparently, not hard enough. And it's not necessarily uncommon for the Secretary of State to be belligerent, but it's not typical. And you don't think the Secretary of State
No,
is
no, don't you think Pompeo is unprecedented in terms of how belligerent he's being?
I don't know if he's unprecedented. I mean, I think there have been times where we have seen Secretary of States who want to go in place like Syria, perhaps.
Well,
perhaps.
Sure, they want to. I'm talking even just in terms of the, I mean, publicly. Not necessarily hawkish, but the fact that the chief diplomat is taking on such a
that's true
pit bull role.
Fair enough. And
no offense to pit bulls or pit bull owners.
So yesterday during the show, we got word that that the acting secretary of defense was stepping down, talking about Patrick Shanahan. And apparently, there was an FBI investigation into stuff that was happening between him and Boeing. But it appears that the issue was some domestic violence incidents that occurred during the course of a messy divorce that he had. His wife was arrested after punching him in the face. His son was arrested after a separate incident in which he hit his mother with a baseball bat. She got really, really injured. It was extremely messy. This happened almost 10 years ago. Surely the White House was aware of this. And in fact, I think Daily Beast has an article that suggests that the White House was specifically quiet about it, bringing this to the Senate. And it's not like the Senate has been terribly rigorous in rejecting any of Trump's picks. So in instances like this, yesterday, I wasn't familiar with any of the reporting as to where Shanahan was on Iran. It occurred to me that it could go one of two ways. One, it could be indicative of Iran hawks, warmongers, getting rid of an impediment to their plans for war. And I want you just to put a pin in that, because I think that's maybe a little bit broad brushed. Shanahan was one of those guys that other people in the Pentagon wanted out because he was interested in going to war with Iran. Well, reporting today suggests it was the former, that Shanahan was someone who was trying to dissuade Donald Trump from being too aggressive with Iran. And these war plans, clearly, we clearly can see, you know, what the game plan is at this stage. And that is to make sure that the United States, its assets, are in close proximity to Iranian assets, with the hopes that this will create friction. And I think you don't need to be a physicist to know that friction can sometimes ignite. And that's the idea. And if it's not igniting, then maybe they throw in a little bit of flint. I don't know, whatever you put in something to ignite. Maybe they do have a drone attack on a ship and say it was a mine. Who knows?
It can go through the Saudis, the Israelis.
Or maybe they just know that there are hardliners within the Iranian government, just like there is in this country. And it may be in their interests to provoke some type of conflict as well. And so all they need to do is provide opportunities for them. But clearly, there is an element of our government, a significant element, that is trying to push for a conflict with Iran. We have Tom Cotton, who is out there explicitly calling for it in the Senate. And you can be sure this is all coordinated. We're going to be in the White House. We're going to be in the State Department. We're going to set the pins up. If we set them up close enough to, you know, a ball that may just go errant, they'll get knocked down. In the meantime, Tom Cotton is providing sort of like some basis in the Senate to respond. And frankly, you know, you see Chris Murphy out there, but nobody's getting... The thing that's scary is you don't see as much attention for the people who are arguing against this. And that is a little bit scary.
I mean, Sanders put on the table a couple of weeks ago a push to get a new authorization because, you know, and which they wouldn't give them. But this is the other really disturbing thing about this is Pompeo actually saying that the same AUMF that they've been using for everything
right,
could be
of course.
Used to attack Iran.
And that we've played clips of where you've had news people asking Pompeo, do you think you have authorization for this? He's, well, if they do something, we do. You know, and so keeping it very, very vague.
I think it is important just to say that, I mean, Iran clearly, even the hardliners by all appearances, do not want to escalate. And I think, you know, there already is conflict in some of these proxy areas like Syria in some ways and Hezbollah. And, you know, they're restarting their proliferation. That's their punishment for us. It's quite public. They're finally right. stepping out of the deal.
And so as we suggested yesterday, it turns out that Shanahan was putting on the brakes or attempting to in terms of this push to war. And I'm sorry, when a charge that is 10 years old about domestic abuse comes up in this context, and it should disqualify him. The other things maybe should have disqualified him. Frankly, anybody who works for Donald Trump should be disqualified as far as I'm concerned. But I'm simply suggesting that these things sometimes get timed. And if Bolton and Pompeo et al. Felt that Shanahan was one of the obstacles to ratcheting up tensions, it's not surprising to see him go in such a fashion. Unclear who is going to be next named, but understand who's advising Donald Trump at this point. Who's left in that White House who has the savvy as to whom to pick? And who doesn't want war with Iran? And that's why you see everyone from Tucker Carlson to, what's her name again?
Trish Regan.
And whoever told Trish Regan to say those things, freaking out because they're afraid that Donald Trump is going to start a war with Iran. And it's hard to know how that works out politically. I would imagine, you know, it's not hard to imagine that there's going to be a problem, an electoral problem for Trump, but it's also not hard to imagine that something else will happen that will make it that, you know, at least part of the American public will rally around the president. Here is Bernie Sanders on CNN, Aaron Burnett's show, making these very points and trying to be one of those voices who competes with Tom Cotton's in the Senate as to what we should do about Iran. And understand, there was no one in the run-up to the Iraq War who had the stature to get on cable television as a senator and who would also say this is and call BS. So we are very lucky, regardless of your perspective on Bernie Sanders, that we have at least one of those people today who will give a full-throated no.
You said earlier today that you don't accept the administration's claim that Iran was behind the attacks on two oil tankers in the Gulf
what
of
Oman. What I said is that that attacks on oil tankers need to be thoroughly investigated, and that's what we need. I also said, and repeat right now, that the worst foreign policy errors in the modern history of this country came when we got into the war in Vietnam, when we were lied to, the American people were lied to about the so-called Gulf of Tonkin, and when we were lied to about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And right. I think the American people should be very, very careful about taking anybody's point of view in terms of about Iran.
I completely hear your point. I'm just curious because obviously, Pompeo has said the CIA concluded that, and there's been nothing to refute that they concluded that. The CIA also, of course, concluded that the Saudi crown prince was responsible directly for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. So do you also think that one deserves investigation like the president is doing, or do you accept the CIA in one case and not the other?
You know, Aaron, what does the owner, the Japanese owner of the tanker say?
They say that enough evidence produced by the U.S. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's the owner of the tanker. I don't know that they have any, you know, particular motive for coming up with that position. They don't agree with what Trump said. All that I'm saying is you need an independent investigation. And this is what I will also say, is that I happen to believe that if the United States went to war against Iran, attacked Iran, it would be an horrific mistake. It would make the war in Iraq look like a cakewalk. And I will do everything that I can, A, to prevent that war, and B, we need the American people to tell Trump that he does not have the constitutional authority to go to war. That is the responsibility of the Congress, not any president.
Now, if Erin Burnett was not such a shill and a hack, she'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Apparently there is a contradiction to the CIA.
Yes.
And it's also weird that Mike Pompeo is telling us what the CIA says.
Yeah, there's a couple of inconsistencies there. So maybe if the Turkish government contradicted a U.S. assessment on Khashoggi,
right,
or Khashoggi's wife said, oh my God, I can't believe you're accusing the Saudi government of dismembering my husband while he's alive. They would never do anything like that.
Right.
They're known for their humane record. I mean, it's incredible that Bernie in particular, I think because of the sort of general ridiculous treatment he gets, but also just like anybody making a rational assessment of something like it.
She would have said that to anybody.
I agree.
She would have said that to anybody.
I agree. It's that anybody who it's still set as the default to be an adult is to have a recklessly insane, irresponsible attitude towards warmongering in the Middle East.
Listen, I'm quite convinced that it's always going to be that. So there's always going to be a need for pushback. But we are fortunate that there is someone who can get on television, is not, you know, former star of a sitcom, and make this argument at this juncture. I mean, I hope people appreciate that, because there was like that, what we just witnessed in the run-up to the Iraq war was unheard of. And frankly, there should be a half a dozen other Democratic senators. There should be more than that, but there aren't. I mean, Chris Murphy, who I think comes the closest.
Chris Murphy comes the closest. Definitely.
Comes close,
but
he's not going to go in full throated because his calculation is I have to maintain some appreciation by that, the adults and whatnot. And that is, it's a problem.
I mean, I think you got to give, in the House, I think Ro Khanna and Ilhan Omar have distinguished themselves
definitely
on this. And I think the other big difference between a Murphy, who does deserve a lot of credit, particularly on Yemen, is the way Sanders also uses these appearances increasingly now to do just the kind of history lesson you're talking about, which is another huge added civic value to not only debunk that, but connect it with, hey, maybe I should look up what the Gulf of Tonkin is, or even the WMD lies.
Let's move on from that. And, this is obviously, we're going to see what happens here. I mean, I don't know how much public opinion at this point is getting factored into any of this. I imagine if there was a huge movement to stop a war in Iran, then maybe it would Donald Trump would shut this down a lot quicker. But there's not going to be, right? Like you're not going to mobilize millions of people who were ignored anyways during the Iraq buildup. I think Trump is a little more sensitive. He has no agenda other than, staving off indictments on the day he walks out of the White House. So, we shall see going forward. I mean, All you can do is support those people who are speaking out against this and remain vigilant. In the meantime, interesting polling, and this is part of a broader point I want to make here. Interesting polling on Medicare for All. Now, you know what Medicare for All is when we say it, don't you? Because when we say Medicare for All, in terms of the plans that Bernie Sanders has presented or Jamila Prepal in the House, Medicare for All is actually closer to what we would call Medicaid for All, which means you're not paying at the point of service. You're not paying for premiums and whatnot. Medicare, you pay premiums. Medicare, you pay some at the point of service. It's better, essentially, health insurance than you have outside of that. But Medicare for All, as constructed in these bills that exist, would also cover a lot more than Medicare does currently. But apparently, most voters don't know this. And they don't know it in a couple of telling ways. Here is a poll taken from May 30th to June 4th. Survey of about 1,200 adults. The share who think the following would happen under a national health plan like Medicare for All. They ask, like, taxes for most people would increase. Everybody seems to understand that, although Democrats, the least. 71% of Democrats believe that. Independents, 80%. GOP, 85%. They're very sensitive to that. All U.S. residents would have health insurance coverage. Dems, 76. Independents, 61. Republicans, 45%. They have a very bad view of it, the Republicans. Private health insurance companies would not be the primary way that Americans would get health coverage. Back up just a little bit, right there. Everybody across the board, 52, 52, 57. Are only half of the people, more or less, are aware of that. Doctors in hospitals would be paid less. Democrats don't believe it. Independents are split. Republicans think that's the case. And I think the Republicans are probably right. Certainly the hospitals, not all doctors, but certainly some doctors. People who buy their own insurance would not be able to keep their current plans. Democrats do not believe that. 24%. Independents, 40%. 53% of Republicans believe that. And they are correct. People who buy their own insurance right now would not be able to keep their current plans. Current plans wouldn't exist. Now, you may not be able to keep your current plan now. It's not up to you. It's up to the health insurance company. Individuals and employers would not continue to pay health insurance premiums. Democrats, only 31% know that. Republicans have a better sense of this. They have 45%. People with employer-sponsored health insurance would not be able to keep their current plans. Only 25% of Democrats believe that, but almost half of Republicans believe that. People would not continue to pay deductibles and co-pays when they use healthcare services. Nobody seems to know that you would not have deductibles. Only a quarter of all voters. So there is a real problem with voters in their awareness of what Medicare for All means, both for good and bad, right? There are a lot of benefits that none of them seem to be aware of. Maybe a quarter of them are aware of what the benefits are. Let's go to the next one. As far as you know, which better describes Medicare for All really is? Is it a healthcare plan that makes everyone get rid of their current private insurance and switch over to Medicare, or a healthcare plan that lets anyone buy into Medicare instead of their current private insurance if they want to? 27% of Democrats, or let me put it this way, 73% of Democrats think it's an public option, that you can buy into it. Independents, 60% think that. So only 40% of independents know what it really is. Only 27% of Democrats know what it really is. But 55% of Republicans know what it really is. But, of course, the problem is that the 55% of Republicans, they don't know any of the benefits. Apparently, not many of the Republicans do either. As our leaders in Washington consider changes to our healthcare system, which of the... Oh, no, that's not the one I wanted. It is... I guess we covered that. What benefits you would get? Oh, okay, here it is. And if you know that Medicare for All meant the following, would you support or oppose it? Okay. Medicare for All is a program that would allow people to buy into the Medicare program if you wanted, but people who have private insurance could keep their existing insurance. 73% say that they would support it. If Medicare for All would provide a Medicare program to Americans and eventually eliminate all private insurance, only 50%, a little less than 50% want it. But those people in that poll, there's still at least 25% of those people who say, I don't want it, have no idea that it would mean you don't pay at the point of service. They just don't know. And
why do you think, is this because
why of, do I think
yeah,
that?
Yeah, go.
I'll tell you what.
I blame the electorate.
No, in this instance.
Or do you blame the message makers?
I blame the lawmakers. And part of this is because the party that has the most amount of people championing it in terms of elected leaders also apparently has a real problem with Medicare for All. I mean, this is a question. This is a problem with the Democratic leadership. Period. End of story. Intercept, June 11th. In preparation for Wednesday's hearing on Medicare for All before the powerful House Ways and Means Committee, the panel's chair met privately with Democrats to lay out how he wants it to unfold. Representative Richard Neal, Massachusetts Democrat.
He's not good.
Been in office since 1989, told the Democrats on the panel that he didn't want the phrase, quote, Medicare for All to be used. Instead, he said the hearing should focus on all the different ways to achieve universal health care or universal health coverage, which he said was a better term to deploy. Medicare for All, he argued, was wrong on policy and is a political loser. They do not want to inform the American public what Medicare for All means. They don't want to do it. We heard Nancy Pelosi's lead advisor go in and tell health insurance companies 6 to 8 months ago, it's not going to happen. Don't worry. So what you've set up is a dynamic where only your opponents have any knowledge of what Medicare for All is, and all they know is the negative stuff. It's not unlike, you know, like AOC. They only know the negative stuff. And why is this happening? There was a story in the Washington Post yesterday, 2 days ago. In recent weeks, Representative Sherry Bustos, chairwoman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Remember, this is the committee that's saying if you're going to challenge if you're going to primary any of our incumbents as a political consulting company, you're never going to get work from us. We're blacklisting you. Sherry Bustos has briefed fellow House leaders in private meetings about focus groups the committee commissioned in three key political battlegrounds. We don't know what they are. The upshot, according to four Democrats familiar with the findings, is that the public's impression of the new House majority is bound up in its battles with Trump, not in its policy agenda. And apparently, they're just completely flummoxed by this. Their worldview is, no impeachment, run on a very, very vague notion of health care. The irony here, of course, is that in the run-up to the 2018 election, there were people on the far left, they were concerned trolling the Democrats, essentially, saying, all you're doing is going out there and talking about Trump, and that's not going to win any elections. Well, in fact, they weren't talking about Trump because they realized they didn't have to, and they were talking about health care. But the fact of the matter is the reason why their health care message, or really I think it could have been any message, would have resonated is because the subtext of all of this is that Donald Trump is going to ruin everything.
And it was specific to he's going to destroy the gains of the ACA, which is still more specific
was tied into it. But there were people running on Medicare for All. 50% of them were running on Medicare for All. The point is that what drove people to the polls was a hatred for Trump, and which did not depress the vote of people was that Democrats were just talking about health care. So Democrats were functioning as if they were, you know, staying on message with but all the while they were allowing oxygen for hatred of Trump to carry the day. And by stifling the impeachment talk, they're starting to bleed that oxygen. Because the fact of the matter is that fires do not just stay static. They either get smaller or they get bigger. You don't have an option of like hitting the pause button here. So you got to offer more oxygen to this if you want it to continue to grow. Otherwise, it's going to shrink. It's a binary choice. Was that comment in The Wire when I can't remember who it was saying to that security guard, I know how you want it to be, but it's not that way.
Marlo, you want it to be one way.
You want it to be one way, but it's another way. And that's exactly what's going on here. And they're being incredibly ignorant about it. Let's play a clip of Nancy Pelosi reading off. Democrats have passed over 50 pieces of legislation. All good legislation. But I want you right now in your mind to think of the three most popular pieces of legislation that Democrats have, the ones that have gotten the most attention over the past couple of years. What would it be? What would be the three most? Medicare for All, $15 minimum wage, get rid of college debt, and Green New Deal. Four. She's going to name 50 things here. See if one of those comes up. I don't know if she's going to name 50, but she's going to name a bunch.
I just want to start off the morning to say Leader McConnell seems to take great pride in calling himself the Grim Reaper. It's part of his political campaign. It's part of the pride he takes as leader of the Senate. And as you see, what he wants to bury, none of these things are going to pass. They won't even be voted on. So think of me as the Grim Reaper, his own quote. He wants to bury the For the People Act for cleaner government, the Equality Act for ending discrimination against LGBTQ community, Dreamers, and to protect our Dreamers and TPS recipients, paycheck fairness, equal pay for equal work, gun violence protection, common sense background check legislation. He's burying that. Climate Action Now. Climate Action Now. Let's bury that. Save the Internet Act, the net neutrality legislation young people are so concerned about. The Violence Against Women Act won't even get a vote. Lowering health care and prescription drug prices won't even get a vote. That's what he said about our agenda, which encompasses most of our early legislation on what we promised for the people. To lower the cost of health care by lowering the cost of prescription drugs, by building infrastructure of America in a green way, and in doing so, increasing paychecks, lower health care, bigger paychecks, cleaner government. Not even going to get a vote. Again, public sentiment is everything. President Lincoln, the Senate will certainly be hearing from the public on issues, values,
but,
really.
No, they won't. And the reason why they won't is because the three or four things that animate this public, in the way that they animate this public, you refuse to vote on. You refuse to even use the words in a hearing about it. She's arguing to the journalists, and there is no argument being made to the people. And this is a massive failure. Massive failure. They simply are out of touch, or maybe conveniently so, or they think that they can in some way thread this needle. And the problem is that we have seen this before. Of all the things, many different reasons why Hillary Clinton lost, many of them attributable to her, many of them not. But in terms of their campaign, they were very, very cautious about saving Paul Ryan. I think that's part of the reason why they never went to Wisconsin, because they didn't want to have to address Paul Ryan, because they wanted to make deals with him. And this is when they try and get too cute. This is the problem.
Well, this is the problem. And I think it's also the problem on the merits when you think about somebody like Hillary Clinton or certainly Joe Biden, is it's not even just tactical. I think they do, you know, they're quite there to cut. It's ideological to cut Social Security and Medicare. But just to circle back to the point I was trying to make earlier, just briefly, which I think is another distinction, is that, yes, plenty of candidates ran on Medicare for All, and some ran on protecting the ACA, and it was all animated by loathing and disgust with Trump. And I think, though, in a narrow sense, like I would be, and I think we advocated very clearly in 2018 for the midterms that, of course, I wanted as many candidates as possible to talk about Medicare for All, because that's where we need to go. But actually, particularly in the context of 2017, 2018, saying, look, we're going to protect what we can of the ACA was the major question of the day, because they were trying to gut it in a way that would jeopardize tens of millions of lives. 2019, with Democrats controlling the House and an open primary with, you know, candidates actually advocating for serious reform of healthcare, you know, the same Richie Neal kind of move doesn't work in the same way.
Well, that's the same argument I'm making. Yeah. It's like you cannot maintain a fire at the same level. It either has to grow always or it has to shrink.
Right.
And so you've got to pump more oxygen into this.
They're always years you've got behind to go in with a their direction. Analogies.
You've got to go into a direction. Yes, they're always fighting the last fight. And that's the best case scenario. I think a lot of this is ideological, or it's some measure of capture. They're not even aware that it's ideological. It doesn't matter. Really, at the end of the day, it does not matter. You have Joe Biden out there now who is, he had 3 fundraisers yesterday. He needs to do this because he's not going to raise money from voters. And that should be a tell to people. I mean, that should be a tell to people. We're not living, this is not 1999. This is not 1990. There are ways to raise money from voters that are very efficient. If they are there, you can raise money for them. If they're not there, you can't. And a lot of people made it like that Hillary Clinton basically swore off, you know, getting mass amounts of volunteers and whatnot because they didn't need it because they had algorithms. But I suspect part of the story is also we don't have them. And so we'll lean a little bit more on algorithms than we wanted to. Like, in other words, I'm not going to look at this as lemonade, as lemons. I'm going to look at this as lemonade. And
lemon pie.
Well, but part of the problem is, I think that, like, because they are so adept at shifting to, like, well, we can compensate for this, that they do not address what is the underlying problem of that, you know, that is symptomatic.
And well, so they can't address
if Joe Biden is not raising money from Democratic voters, but instead getting it almost exclusively from big donors in terms of actually sheer dollars. That's a problem. That's a problem. Putting aside ideology and the implications of that, it's just indicative of a problem, I should say. And it's indicative of a very shallow support where everybody's just like, well, I think he's going to win. And I'll leave it to other people to make sure that happens. I don't know if that sounds familiar at all. So he's at a fundraiser at the Carlyle Hotel in New York City. Mr. Biden stressed the need to be able to reach out, to reach consensus under our system. Now, I just like, this is going to make you want to vomit because you have been following politics for a while. For people who haven't followed politics, I'm sure maybe it sounds okay. But I don't know that they're reading this stuff right now, frankly. Maybe he's just practicing. Maybe this is just good for... But he went on to say, I know the new left tells me that I'm this old-fashioned, well, guess what? If we can't reach a consensus in our system, what happens? It encourages and demands the abuse of power by a president. That's what it does. You have to be able to reach consensus under our system, our constitutional system of separation of powers. I just don't remember this happening in the aughts either, never mind during his vice presidency. Mr. Biden then recalled his time serving in the Senate. Incidentally, he was in the Senate in the aughts. I was in a caucus with James O. Eastland, Mr. Biden said, briefly channeling the late Mississippi Senator's southern drawl. Mr. Biden said to Mr. Eastland, he never called me boy. He always called me son. Now, I don't think
he would call you boy.
Well, I think
I don't know if you have the markers of what a gentleman like that would use the word boy for, Joe.
It's pretty impressive.
Now, don't get me wrong. The Irishman ain't actually white, but you ain't a boy neither.
He doesn't quite pick up on why that dynamic might be there.
No.
Incidentally, I should tell you that he's doing this on the day before Juneteenth.
Juneteenth. It's good timing.
Juneteenth.
I have never called Mr. Figures boy.
I might have to say it's a little old-fashioned of Joe.
Slightly. Juneteenth, of course, is the day when the final state abolished slavery. That would be Texas in 1865, obviously. He never called me boy. He always called me son. I'm doing Biden's fake drawl. And then he brought up deceased Georgia senator, a guy like Herman Talmadge, one of the meanest guys I ever knew. You go down the list with all these guys, and guess what? At least there was some civility. We got things done. We didn't agree on much of anything. We got things done. We got it finished. But today you look at the other side and you're the enemy, not the opposition, the enemy. We don't talk to each other anymore. As I'm sure he was wagging his finger at somebody. This is a guy who's never talked anything other than at a people. But Biden clearly doesn't appreciate the fact that maybe part of the reason why he was not called boy was because he was a white senator.
Maybe he should, you know, I just like, though, it's like, I know his aides have to be like, can you talk about working with, like, Richard Lugar on arms control or something? Like,
right.
Does every example have to be the most obscene people serve in the Senate in history?
I actually disagree. I think his aides are saying this is exactly what you have to do. You
reach
out to those people who are racist.
Oh, and incidentally,
don't know they're racist.
You didn't march for civil rights either.
Who don't know that they're racist. And convince them that they're not racist. That what we have here is not a problem of like someone's racist and someone's maybe a victim of that racism or finds racism to be inherently problematic, but rather it's just that people are just not tolerant of your racism. That's the problem.
I'd cut Social Security with you, son. Not the other boy.
Not the other boy. Well, good for Bill de Blasio reminding Joe Biden that it's not such a feat to be a white senator and overlook someone's abject racism. Bill de Blasio writes, it's 2019 and Joe Biden's longing for the good old days of civility typified by James Eastland. Eastland thought my multiracial family should be illegal and that whites were entitled to, quote, the pursuit of dead N-words. It's past time for apologies or evolution from Joe Biden. He repeatedly demonstrates that he's out of step with the values of the modern Democratic Party. I would argue that that's even too limited. He's out of step with the values of the majority of Americans, even those who don't call themselves Democrats.
I also just have to say, I mean, I just caught this Jeff Zeleny working for, is it the New York Times? Zeleny. I'd seen it. I mean, this is a quote, and I have no doubt that some of the dynamic you're talking about is at play, but apparently, no, his aides are saying he needs to use a less problematic example, one person close to Biden says, referring to the segregationist senator. More than once, aides have gently reminded Mr. Biden of the problem with the formulation. This was with regards to this other habit he has on the flip side of saying that he marched for civil rights when, in fact, he did not.
I wonder. I still wonder. To be honest with you, I wonder about that.
It seems like he's leaning into all this, including all the little comments he makes about touching people.
Listen,
he's leaning into it, but he's also never been that good at running for president.
He's never been good at running for president. But when aides do that type of stuff,
they're signaling to another block that we get it.
It's the Kissinger thing.
Yeah, that's exactly. Also totally possible.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
Because they don't want to talk to reporters as if they represent a racist Dixiecrat?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, and it's not just that. It's that they want to assure the people who care about this stuff that, you know, just Joe being Joe.
We get it.
This is Joe being Joe.
We get it.
As opposed to Joe specifically knowing that I've got to appeal to, not full-on active racists, but just more like passive racists. I mean, we were just talking about this earlier. Like, you know, Donald Trump is out there and there's always been this sort of, I don't know if it's that much of a debate, but Donald Trump is not racist. He's just exploiting racism. Or Donald Trump doesn't care about whether there are immigrants in this country or not. It's just that it helps his project get reelected by immiserating these people, which is different from my project is to immiserate these people. And if it means I lose the election, but I'm able to really cause pain and suffering with brown people, then so be it. Well, Donald Trump wouldn't say that. And the problem is that in the English language, we don't have a way of differentiating between that. Both are horrible, and both, in my estimation, are racist. But they're different types of racism, right? Like, you can be an a-hole, and you can be a d-bag, and you're slightly different. But at the end of the day, the implications are the same. And I'm not convinced that we don't have a word for the type of racism which is like, I just don't think your life is worth any value enough that it should in any way impose upon my objectives. Versus like, my objective is to make your life worthless. And I don't think we developed that because for the better part of the history of this country, at least, the former has not been in any way problematic. Like, it's one thing to say, okay, we're not going to go out of our way to burn a cross on your, that is going a little far. But honestly, do we have to really care about where, you know, what's going on with you if it in any way inhibits my ability to do X, Y, or Z? Meanwhile, so that's Joe Biden's notion of race in this country.
You should just start negotiating with Donald Trump now.
Now Joe Biden goes to his next big donor fundraiser. And he talks about, I mean, all this guy does is go and crap on Democrats as he goes to these different functions. I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with the Democrat Party. Good for him. At what point does Joe Biden start referring to Democrats as Democrat Party instead of the Democratic Party? By the way, he says, you know, remember I got in trouble with some of the people on my team on the Democratic side because I said, quote, you know what I've found is rich people are just as patriotic as poor people. Not a joke. I mean, we may not want to demonize anybody who's made money. The truth of the matter is you all know in your gut what has to be done. We can disagree in the margins, but the truth of the matter is it's all within our wheelhouse and nobody has to be punished. Now, first of all, I don't even know if he's speaking English here. None of that makes any sense whatsoever. It like each phrase seems to contradict the next one. No one's standard of living will change. Nothing would fundamentally change. Because when we have an inequality as large as we have in the United States today, it brews and ferments political discord and basic revolution. Not a joke. I'm not. Revolution. But not a joke. It allows demagogues to step in and say the reason where we are now is because of the other. You're not the other. I need you very badly. I hope if I win this nomination, I won't let you down. I promise you. I have a bad reputation. I always say what I mean. The problem is that sometimes say all that I mean. Okay, so to the extent that I can decipher what he's saying here is, look, you know you have to pay a little bit more in taxes, but nothing fundamentally is going to change. We're still going to have runaway wealth inequality and whatnot, but you need to pay taxes to tampen down the sense of resent. You guys need to do lip service. And I promise you, I'll be the guy who makes it look like your lips are really flapping. I will not let you down. I'm going to hold your lips. I'm going to caress your lips.
I think it's also just...
And I'm just going to have them go like this.
It's such a... You know, obviously it's a campaign. So Sanders, you know, speaks in these like very... you know, binary terms, right? About, you know, basically the 99% versus the 1% or whatever the formulation is. But like the fact that he just reduces it to a morality play, it's not just that it's wrong and it misses the point. It's that it's only a couple of degrees over from the same people that bitched and had hysteria during Obama's presidency when they said, as an example, Obama wants to raise our rate by 2%. This is like Nazi Germany. I mean, do you remember there was a period of time when under Obama,
the bankers,
Biden,
were like, yes,
the most moderate, like literally deals like, how about an exchange for cutting Social Security? You don't have the private jet loophole anymore. And they were like, this is like Kristallnacht.
Right.
He's basically saying, I mean, he's in their terrain against all of the grassroots interests of the Democratic Party.
And he does not think there is anything other than a rhetorical problem. That's the point. Yeah, if you think that you can repair what is wrong with wealth inequality without anything fundamentally changing, then you do not think it's an actual problem. You think it's actually a PR issue. That's what he's saying here.
This isn't who we are. Nothing deep on anything. I mean, that's another thing. This isn't who we are. What the hell does that mean?
And the frame that we are punishing millionaires and billionaires because we are in some way taking their money through taxes. The frame that we're punishing them is an incredibly reactionary frame. This is not punishment. This is, we need to structure society in a way that works for everybody. You're not being punished. No, this is honestly like what, I mean, it's deeply narcissistic to perceive that as punishment. it's also juvenile. It's like, I tell my daughter, you know, empty the garbage. Why are you punishing me? I'm not punishing you. It's just you have a responsibility. This is how the household functions. You're not being punished. It's just your job. And the structure of society gets destabilized when you have billionaires owning, what, getting $22 trillion worth of wealth over the past less than 30 years, and the bottom 50% of the country losing $900 billion. That's a problem. It's not a PR problem. It's a structural problem, one that destabilizes society. And the reason why it destabilizes society is because it immiserates so many people. So there's really two issues you could latch on there before, you know, if you needed to abandon the PR aspect of it. One, that people are suffering. And two, that it's even bad for the people at the top, because at the end of the day, you can't have that many people suffering and a society function. And he doesn't even have the guts to say that one. He doesn't even have the guts to say to these people, you're not going to be able to keep all of it. You may not even be able to keep 3/4 of it, but you'll probably be able to keep half of it if we actually address some of these problems.
Well, precisely.
He doesn't even have the guts to say that. He's just saying, like, eh.
Well, I mean, not the guts. And this is, again, this is that perfect fusion of, here's a guy whose whole life he's just been the senator from the credit card industry. And because I think in general,
he takes Amtrak.
No, he takes Amtrak, so he's middle class Joe. But I think in general, like, I think this is a very good example of why, and also, you know, very good way to understand the Clintons, that you can't reduce these things one way or another. There's like a perfect fusion at a certain point where here's a guy who's been taking corporate donations and advocating, going back to the 70s, he fought against Ted Kennedy on antitrust legislation. He is the quintessential corporate Democrat. And yes, campaign contributions and money is a huge factor, but that also becomes cognitive capture. That becomes ideology. He doesn't think, it's not even a question of guts. He doesn't think it's a problem. He thinks it's a question of a couple of percentage points in the tax rate and a few more, you know, college credits available, and that's all you're going to get from the guy.
All right.
At best.
That's what we got for you today. We're going to head into the fun half. You can join us by becoming a member. Join themajorityreport.com. For just pennies a day, you can support this program. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. In the fun half, we got all sorts of fun stuff. This is Joe Biden stuff. He gets worse each day goes on. I think I sort of predicted that. It's just a question of how much of this is going to get out to the public. That's my question.
Father, if I have sinned.
Closer, but no.
Yeah. Michael, last night was Tuesday night. What happened?
Alona Minkowski joined us for the first appearance of when she will come in from time to time as a co-host. What's that?
That someone just sent me the... Do you have that?
Wait,
I know what that is.
Okay.
It's just some documentary evidence.
I'm not saying anything.
Stick around for the plugs, folks, because afterwards we have a breaking story. Apparently.
Breaking story.
I can't believe
Sam's
it.
Sam's obviously
shocked
by this.
I'm shocked.
No one would ever expect this. So Alona Minkowski was in studio. Commentary on Bernie Sanders, Marx, and the relationship between basically the politics of possible and extending the decommodification of society. We talked about Iran. We talked about the secret CIA group pushing war in Iran, a whole bunch of other things. This weekend, we're going to be talking with Ryan Grimm, patreon.com/TMBS. Michael Brooks Show on YouTube. A lot of clips up there now, over 52,000 subscribers. Follow, as an example, all of our Lula and Brazil coverage. We've been doing that contemporaneously since the very beginning before the story blew up. Patreon.com/TMBS.
Folks, Jamie had to split for family stuff. But check out The Antifada. Go to patreon.com/TheAntifada. Matt?
Yeah, this Saturday is going to be The Blithedale Romance by Nathaniel Hawthorne, where we talk about the early socialists and also actually how the guy who went later founded the New York Times was making his hay in his early career by advocating against the utopian socialists. So anti-communist from the beginning.
All right, Matt, put this up on the screen here because I haven't had a chance to watch it. All right, so I should just tell you that we got a couple of emails. I did. Saying that this guy, Caleb Kane, I interviewed him for Ring of Fire, and I think we're going to have him on this program. I'm going to do a pre-tape, I think, in the next couple of days. He is a guy, we should just say this. So about, what was it, 2 months ago? 2 months ago, this guy, Caleb Kane, reached out to us on Twitter or to Matt, or I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, it was when I was in Phoenix, actually. I retweeted his, he did like a 48-minute thing about how he fell into the alt-right on YouTube.
Right. And I saw part of this and I was like, you know what? I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I need to feel very confident when we present stuff, regardless of what it is, but particularly stuff like this, that it's real. And I didn't want, you know, some, alt-right guy is like, we own the libs, you know, on this. And so, and I'd forgotten about it, but then it turned out he was the subject of that New York Times article, which talked about how people basically get funneled into the alt-right. And literally funneled, right? You start watching stuff that is just sort of like, whatever you want to call it, alt-light, or like, it's intellectual, but it's in the dark web, that type of thing. And it funnels you down.
Ideas.
And so the Times wrote this, and so I interviewed him on Ring of Fire. And he said that one of the what happened was that Destiny, the guy from Twitch, would debate some of these people and got into the algorithm. And he said, and that's how then I found your show, The Majority Report. I was like, oh, that's great. And it's also, I mean, it had a big impact on me in terms of like what we do here. I mean, part of the reason we went at Dave Rubin for so hard for so long was that a couple of years ago, he announced that he had a book coming out. And I literally said at that point, when they start to review his book and they search for him online, I want to make sure that people understand who he really is. And so...
Oh, I thought it was because it was fun.
And, well, then it turned out to be super fun.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty fun.
But the idea was, I wanted to get into, broadly speaking, his algorithm. If anybody looked for him, so that people would hear the other side of this. And, but...
I'll see
that Kane interview really sort of put that in perspective. And so someone emailed me and said that Kane was on... Jimmy Dore's program, and he had mentioned me, I think, in that same context with Destiny. I'm not sure. And but that Jimmy had cut it out, literally cut it out in the clips, but not just cut around that, but like had dropped it out, which is exactly what I said. No effing way. So I tweeted about it because I wanted to just respond to everybody, but apparently it may actually have happened.
Come
Let's
on.
Put it. Go back and just see this. I haven't seen this. Now, if it's not, no. What happened?
Yeah. So back to the video. We'll play the audio
that was
first.
Sam's tweet.
We'll play the audio before we play the video. How about that?
Okay. What is? Well, just play the whole thing because I don't know what this is.
It's a compilation comparing the video to the audio.
Oh, it's both. Oh, yeah. You're kidding.
This is the video to the audio. So we'll play the audio first and then go to the video.
Yeah.
I mean, usually if I'm going to watch the news, I either turn on your show, Sam's show, or the Young Turks. That's usually who I go to for news. Your show or the.
Oh my God! He actually did do that.
Here's the full clip now.
I mean, usually if I'm going to watch the news, I either turn on your show or the Young Turks. That's usually who I go to for news. I mean, usually if I'm going to watch the news, I either turn on your show, Sam's show, or the Young Turks. That's usually who I go to for news. Your show or the Young Turks.
Oh, my my God. And that's not even the one that they talked about.
Yeah.
Yes. Holy cow, this is...
So we don't have the unedited version of this one, but you can notice the same cut.
I stand corrected. I definitely did not think that... I thought that people were just bullshitting and trying to start drama.
I am honestly shocked.
All right, here's one more.
My solution is for the bread tubers and all the left tubers, people like you, to go and debate with these people and to get into their algorithm so that people see the other side of the bread tubers and all the left tubers, people like you, to go and debate with these people and to get into their algorithms.
You can see the flash. It's helpful that they
is
kept
that
adding.
Their jump cut that they put in themselves?
That's what they put in themselves.
Oh, my God. But somebody said that was in the context of, I think there could have been another one.
I think that might have been the one he mentions, Destiny, after BreadTube.
Somebody had said it was in the context of what took him out of it.
I'm sorry. When I heard this, I definitely, what the fuck, Jimmy? You don't make me look good around here.
I mean, even you were
dubious about that happening. I was like, that has to be bullshit.
I will be clear.
That people are just trying to cause
my
more nonsense.
My estimation of Jimmy's integrity is pretty low. I will concede that. And in fact, I think it's to my credit that I was aware that I was predisposed to thinking that. And so therefore, maybe I erred on the other side by saying, no way. Sam, emotionally, you think you could believe that he would do this. But intellectually, you have to know that is such a sad, pathetic move that's impossible. And I was wrong.
I mean, when you think about it,
I was definitely no way.
This is not healthy. This is not healthy for me. This is not healthy for me.
No, it's not. And I'm hoping that they did this as a joke.
I mean, I
want
to
get this response.
I want to make the larger response. I mean, we're talking about de-radicalizing kids. And we've heard all over the place that our libertarian debates have pulled a lot of people from that spectrum. And to omit Sam like that is
he doesn't care about it.
Well, it's maybe leaving some kids to the alt-right pipeline.
The other thing is, and now I've got to watch the whole interview that I was told that he spent the whole time trying to convince Caleb that the New York Times article completely maligned him and was completely wrong. And every time Caleb said there were some problems apparently with the New York Times article, as there is with every, but that the gist of it seemed to be right. And Jimmy is so adamant about maintaining his YouTube, whatever it is, cred or money or I don't know what, that he uses as an excuse to bash the New York Times rather than in any way to indict the fact that YouTube only is algorithmic, doesn't have moderators of content that need to be demonopolized. Wow, that is...
Well, it's weird because if you look
How do you watch... Let me ask you this. How do you...
This is a reference. This is just a random person tweeting out Jimmy Dore's previous video on the Caleb Kane New York Times story about where Jimmy just was pissed off about the New York Times and how this is going to be bad for his money, basically.
I just don't understand.
That's just what the woman's tweeting, though.
I watched the video. Fair representation of what Jimmy was saying.
I just don't understand how there are people who watch him who, like, yes, I get it. I don't like Jimmy. Jimmy doesn't like me. Jimmy has an open invitation to come on the show again anytime he wants. He could call in now. He could text me. He could text anybody here. Just like he did that one time that we had him on. Because I gave him a heads up. We're going to be talking about this tomorrow. Do you want to address it? This is 2 years ago. No, go ahead. Rip me a new one. And then as soon as we started, he called in and I was like, sure, come on. The idea that somebody would bring up Jimmy Dore's name in a positive way, and my response would be not to push back, to try to erase it.
Well, I think to be fair, there's not
like
a
even if you're a jag off comedian,
there's not a person.
Even if you're a self-professed jag off comedian, don't you need to put like another adjective in there at one point to describe a jag off comedian whose ego is so frail that I am going to jump cut around someone mentioning Sam's name.
No one in this studio would do the extra work, though.
That's true.
Give us work.
That's true.
Give us credit. I want his name eliminated.
Honestly, if I said that, I mean, can you imagine just the reverse?
Actually, honestly, we have if you said that, we would be like, dude,
are you okay?
I'm going to cover the next 3 days honestly, for you. Like, I think you need to take a vacation.
I feel like
we would have the space here to say, you absolutely don't want to do that. That's demented and embarrassing.
So I can stop editing references to Ari Berman out of the show now?
I don't want to hear Ari Berman's name. God damn it.
Honestly, like, I feel like if I said that to you guys, your first reaction would be like, ha, you're joking, right?
Yes.
Are you serious?
Please, God, tell me you're joking.
I mean, honestly, that is, wow. That is so.
I feel proud of myself about that.
Well, what it really is.
Well, and if I'm one of Jimmy's fans, like, I got to wonder, like, what else does he cut out? Is that it? He just cuts out my name when it's mentioned positively? Is that it? Really?
Well, he cuts stuff. I
don't know which is worse. This is a regular practice of his, or he just took out all the references to Sam. Wow. All right.
Lava Jato.
And the thing is
maybe good time. Maybe look, just maybe good time for a little follow up segment on that in light of the Intercept reporting. Just saying.
Well, we could do that too. All right. We're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. We will take your calls. Of course, if you name people we don't want you to, we're going to cut it in a deceptive way so that it is if you never brought up their name. And you can do that at 646-257-3920. Just remember, if you bring up something that I don't like, I'm going to pretend we had the conversation, but that you never said it. See you, but not necessarily hear you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks, reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych. Fuck 'em.
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on!
Fuck 'em. Things I do
bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday. Happy birthday to me, Jew boy.
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black.
Come on.
To pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. Total, pussy, 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 total, pussy.